When choosing a partner in the past, I would fall in love first and try to make them fit. This did not end well, as you can imagine. After an unequal marriage, when I drowned in domestic responsibility and a 5-year stint with someone who repeatedly cheated, I wanted to choose better, as we women are told to do. I found my current partner on the internet. I was determined to fully understand what I wanted and needed first. What were the deal breakers? I vetted all potential suitors by message and looked at their profiles. Red flaggers were immediately deleted and blocked. I believe this is known as the haystack method. When I came to meet my partner for our first date, I already knew we worked on paper. We had the same values, beliefs, diet, philosophy, and dreams for the future. Luckily, we hit it off in person, and it is the most wonderful relationship I've ever been in. I wish this for everyone. Hi. I'm Zahn Vilines, and this is the Liberating Motherhood Podcast. Today, we are talking about dating wisely in a patriarchy with Jenny Young. Jenny Young is a professor of writing and rhetoric at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay, specializing in applied rhetoric, humor, and feminism. She holds a PhD in rhetoric and discourse studies from Case Western Reserve University and a satire writing certificate from Second City, Chicago. Her work has been published in McSweeney's, Ms. Magazine, HuffPost, and others, and covered by major media outlets such as the New York Times, Rolling Stone, Washington Post, Newsweek, and Wall Street Journal. Jenny Young is also a friend of the podcast, and this is her second time here. This time, she's here to talk about her amazing book, Burn the Haystack, which will be out April 7th. Jenny, thank you so much for coming back. I'm so excited to have you here.
Oh, thank you for having me back. I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome. Before we get started, I have my usual administrative reminders. This podcast, as everyone knows, depends on reader support, which means that your support really does matter. You can offer that support in the form of heart reacts, positive reviews, shares on social media, telling a friend, telling an enemy, all of this kind of stuff. Comments and other engagement really help boost the podcast visibility because of the way social media and other algorithms work. And if you're a super fan, you can become a paid subscriber on Substack or on Patreon. Paid subscribers get at least 8 extra essays a month, plus a bonus podcast episode. They also get access to the private Liberating Motherhood support community. To sign up, visit zahn.substack.com or patreon.com/liberatingmotherhood. And that part is all one word. So, Jenny, let's just jump into it. Tell me about your amazing new book. I'm so excited about it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm excited about it too. So, the book is the comprehensive guide on burned haystack dating method. One of the, you know, this, my platforms developed organically because I was working with women to sort of articulate and refine the method and tweak the rules and create the heuristics and identify the rhetorical patterns. And all of this was happening in real time. Like as you know, I had no idea it was going to turn into this. I had embarked on a non-monetized academic project in which I was trying to accomplish something specific, and I wanted some input from other women, and I wanted us to arrive at, you know, like kind of a set of principles that could be helpful and protective of women, but I did not foresee any of this. So which so it's like beautiful in that the community is 100% like legitimate and authentic. Where it gets a little hairy is that we've now amassed so much content and knowledge and findings and applications, and it's sort of all over the place that it needed a book. Like it needed one place to be well organized in a way that walks people through the philosophy behind the method, the how-to, the, you know, if-then scenarios, like if he says this, then you should do this, the FAQs. All of this needed to be in one place in an accessible, easy-to-digest format that women could turn to as a handbook of how to date successfully and safely and efficiently. But also, I wanted it to be a source of emotional support and community building and humor. There's tons of humor in the book. And I'll leave it at that for now because I know we're going to talk more about it. But like the book is it. And as more and more fake Facebook groups spring up and more people are, stealing intellectual property, which I just realized is like unavoidable in 2026. This is it. Like, this is the real thing, and it's what works.
Yeah, so I'm glad that you mentioned the intellectual property piece thing, because I think that this is a lot of is this is something that people who aren't professional writers don't really know a lot about. But there is this whole world of people stealing your work. And when you're the originator of the work, you can look sort of like protective and defensive and even a bit narcissistic when you are defending that work. But what happens is, like, people steal your work and they water it down, or they use it harmfully, or they use it to make money for themselves. So I think it's really important to point out to listeners that, like, if you like Jenny, if you like me, if our work has helped you in any way, when you see these people stealing this work, you really do need to report them, because they really are doing harm. And they're not just harming, the originators, they're harming anybody who wants to learn how to use this work and how to make the world a better place. And, like, we just, shouldn't steal women's labor. Like, I think that's pretty basic.
It is. And the other thing people can do, even you don't even have to rise to the level of reporting, just ignore it. Like, this is the foundation of burned haystack, which is like that black to burn rule, is we're not feeding these men in any way. Not with our time, not with our attention, not with our bodies, not with our paychecks. And I would encourage women to apply that same philosophy when they encounter bad actors on the internet, which they're out there. And I knew that was the trade-off. I knew that if I wanted this to be freely accessible, that people were going to steal and profit from my work in ways that I'm not. And it's happening to a greater degree than I was prepared for. That's true. But I'd make that same trade again, just in the interest of being able to reach a larger community. But yeah, everything you just said like resonates with me deeply. So thank you for getting it and for articulating it.
Yeah, it's so frustrating. So I think the thing, when I discovered your work, I was immediately a super fan. Like 3 paragraphs in, I was
Oh,
like, I
thank
love this
you.
woman. And
I had already discovered you long before that. Did you know that?
I don't even remember, like, where on my, like, human existence timeline I found you. It feels like you've always been in my life.
I would say the same thing. And I had been following your work and thinking, oh my God, she's such a badass. And she's saying the things that all women know and want to say, but won't dare to say it. But I did not know that I was on your radar at all. So the first time you reached out, I was just absolutely giddy. And I emailed my agent. I'm like, oh my God, look, Zahn knows I exist.
So I think there's this really, I mean, obviously we're both talking about how relationships can be harmful and all of that, but one of the really important intersections of our work that I think is also an area that's really hard to get women to kind of change the way they are acting is, I have this idea that, patriarchy is the extraction of resources of women. And like, that's not an original idea from me. I mean, I think that's what patriarchy is. And, one of the things that men do is they steal our time so that they can benefit from our time in a myriad of ways. It makes them feel good about themselves. They use our time to get their own leisure time. They steal our time to have sex. Sometimes they just steal our time to make us feel bad. And I think that's something you've really hit on with your work, where you don't advocate, like, arguing with these men or telling them they're stupid or, reporting them to their bosses or whatever. You're just like, get rid of them, silence them. And I think that's so important, because the thing that I see a lot, and I feel this impulse in myself sometimes, is we want to feed the beast and we want to fight with the beast, and it doesn't work. And all it does is dysregulate us and upset us.
And I think so, like a lot of the women in the burned haystack community who are also participating in these fake groups and communities, I think they genuinely see it as like we're there to defend the real mission, but that's not the outcome of their involvement in those groups because, as you just said, they're now handing over their time and energy to the patriarchy. Even if they're doing it like out of the goodness of their hearts. It doesn't matter because there's an economic distribution of energy and time and labor and bodies, and they're feeding that patriarchal system by participating in it at all.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have to claw back as much of our time as we possibly can in like every area that we can. So one thing that I'm interested in is, I know this started as an academic project for you and that you're an academic at heart, and that definitely comes through in your work. How did you develop this method? Like, where did this come from?
I mean, initially, it just came from my own frustration and demoralization as a woman on the dating apps. And I remember I had one night where I just thought, we're not going to do this anymore. And I didn't necessarily know who we was at that moment, but it was like I was starting to realize that the experience I was having was not isolated. It was the experience all women were having on dating apps. And I became very determined. I didn't know how or like what my approach was going to be, but that I had to find a way to push against it. And then shortly after that, thinking I literally have a doctorate in discourse analysis. Like I have a lot of tools at my disposal to address this productively. I just had to figure out like what vehicles to use to do that, how to talk about it in a way that was accessible, and how to build a community that was interested in working with me.
So there's this dynamic in dating, and I think that your work kind of addresses this. And I'm gonna try to describe it. And I have to try to describe it by telling you about this conversation my husband and I had last night when I was getting ready for this interview, which there's this video going around of this woman who's on a first date with a man, and they're coming back from the date, and she's like a Disney princess. Like, that's her job, is she goes to like kids' birthday parties. So she works with kids. She's very cute. She's very charming. She's just like the kind of person that like most of us would really like. So there's on their date, there is a 6-year-old's birthday party, and they're singing happy birthday to the 6-year-old. And this woman joins in. It's delightful. Like, that's charming and nurturing. And like, I would just love a person like that. But he, their whole drive back, is lecturing her about how she has shamed him and embarrassed him. And, for their future together, that's not what he wants. And it's insane. It's so insane. I'm gonna post a link to it like in the show notes just so people can see it.
Did she capture like this actual conversation in real
Yes,
time? Oh
the
God.
whole thing is on video and it's
Awesome.
pure lunacy. And then she tries to get out of the car and he starts trying to stop her. And so what you see is you see how this really, abnormal behavior can quickly spiral into violence. So Jeff, my husband, and I were watching this, and he said something like, I'm so glad you never had any experiences like this. And I was like, oh yeah, I was really lucky. And then I started thinking, and I realized that I had had a number of experiences like this. It's just that it was so normalized that it didn't even register to me as like that was a dangerous date. I had a guy that I went on a first date with who, seemed nice, nice guy in caps. And then the second date, he started screaming about how he was going to shoot everybody. I had a guy I went on a date with, again, like with friends, we were bowling. He was nice. He wasn't punching people or doing anything super crazy. And then he started messaging me, calling me a whore. So there's that dynamic of the switch flipping by like the second or third date. There's the other dynamic where they maintain the nice guy facade for a while and then they become progressively more abusive. And then there's the one where they like flip the switch back and forth, where they're very into you and then they ghost you. And I don't think that people who don't date men understand that this is so normal that we often don't even notice it. And we like question ourselves, what did I do to make him do that? But your method really captures the fact that there are early warning signs if we learn to look for them.
Yes, I can't tell you how many inquiries or posts or messages I get that include a screenshot of a guy's bio, and the woman will say, "Honestly, I did not see any problems here. He was great on the first date." And then, over time, it always becomes something nightmarish, right? On a kind of a spectrum of what that nightmare becomes. But I would say 99% of the time, we see it in his bio. We find disciplinary directive. We find I'm the prize pattern. We find conditional decency. We find were you at the Capitol on January 6th? We find are you my mother? Like these patterns, I'm not saying that's true 100% of the time. I would feel comfortable saying it's true 95% of the time.
Yeah, so
Which,
I
yeah.
can you talk a little bit more about these patterns and about sort of if there are certain types of people who evince certain patterns, like what I don't just explain a little bit to me more about like what people are looking for and what it reveals.
So we use rhetorical patterning to identify red flags. And as you know, there are a variety of red flags, right? Like some red flags just suggest that someone's going to be annoying or a lot of emotional labor. That might be the bored toddler pattern guys or the are you my mother? Others keep turning into abuse over and over and over again. So any man giving women directives in his profile of any kind. And I mean as low key as saying something like, you should be fit and ready for adventure. That might not sound like a problem, but it is a problem. And it'll almost always turn into much more of a problem over time. So any kind of directive, even if it's implied, like one of the things the book includes is the common dating app prompts that met. So these aren't things written by men. These are things written by Bumble, written by Hinge. But if a man even selects them, I would rule him out on that metric alone. Like if he picks the you should not go out with me if, done. Like we're done. We're done with that guy, no matter how he answers it. And so there's a whole list of those prompts that you don't even have to get to word one with the man. The fact that he chose it is a problem because he's using this vehicle, the dating app, to exercise control over women that he hasn't even met yet, that he hasn't even conceived of yet.
Yeah, the pre-control thing is really, I feel like that flows directly from like red pill manosphere
Oh,
concept.
yeah, for
Like we
sure. Yeah.
see this framing of women as like children and possessions who must be controlled, and that
Yes.
just like bubbles out on these apps.
And they feel very comfortable laying down that law. Like you can tell. I mean, some of them are overtly like aggressive and violent, but many of them you can tell as the guy's sitting there typing it, he doesn't actually intend anything nefarious. Now he'll end up nefarious, but like in his mind, he just thinks this is how things work. That women are still submissive to men, and that that is like right and good and how things should work. And there's no way that doesn't become abusive.
Well, and I like that you added that, you know, he might not think of himself as nefarious.
Right. No, he doesn't.
I think so often we as women are made to feel like we have to give men a chance and we have to give them the benefit of the doubt. And so if he doesn't mean it, we have to
Right.
educate him.
Yes, and that's the beauty of critical discourse analysis, which is my primary methodology upon which Bernd Haystack is founded, because so CDA is the acronym. What CDA does really well is reveal to you what people are really like that they have no idea they're revealing. Like the intention doesn't matter at all. I get that all the time where women say he didn't mean anything by it. I'm like, yeah, I know. That doesn't matter at all. That's actually great. Like we're not interested in his intentions. We're trying to get at the rhetorical linguistic clues that reveal who he actually is, because that's who you're going to end up with.
I went, so when I was dating, and this has been like 20 years now, I went on a date with this guy who was, so I was, this young, like conventionally attractive, like blonde girl, and, tended to attract men who were like drawn to that. And I had sort of learned that they tended not to be safe. So I started trying to pursue like nerdy, like not conventionally attractive men, thinking that that would be safer because we always just, I don't know, make dumb decisions when we're dating. So I found this guy who was like very dweeby and like very smart. And, he presented himself as a nice guy, by which I mean he kept telling me how nice he was. And, back then I was young and I'm just like, well, he says he's nice. Like
He wants to be nice.
And he was some sort of test instructor, like GRE, that sort of thing. Because he had gotten a very high score on like his GRE and his SAT and his LSAT, and he was very proud of this. And like I happened to be someone who tests well, so we sort of like joked about that, and it seemed fine. But there were like a number of comments he made early on that made it clear that he really looked down on people who didn't test well. And he really saw himself as like a superior sort of person because he saw himself as intelligent. And because I was not being judged by him in that moment, like I missed that flag. And, then we went on a date and he turned out to be a complete psycho. Like, I mean, just awful. It was an awful date. I was like trapped in his car with him, yammering on about his ex and how women should shave and what they should shave and
My
just a
God.
nightmare. And so, I didn't call him back and I reposted my ad on whatever dating app I was using at the time. It was probably like Craigslist or Match or something. And he emailed me a couple of days later with a link to my ad. And he was like, why are you still advertising for a partner? Like
Oh my God.
he decided we were married, I guess. And I was like, well, I don't think it's going to work out. And he sent me like a 10 to 15,000 word essay
Oh my
on why I was dumber than him because my SAT score was 10 points lower than his. He like went through my blog and found examples of my stupidity. It was insane. And at the time, I felt like, oh, I never could have seen this coming. But in hindsight, it was there. It was there immediately in our first interaction.
I think it usually is. And I've been in the same boat. Like I have ended up with similar type of people for far more than one date, I'm ashamed to admit. So it has nothing to do with, like intelligence or education level or anything like that. Like these are social scripts that we are all subject to and conditioned to entertain. And it's in the intentional, like, unwiring and then rewiring of how we approach love and dating that lies the power to change these dynamics for women. And that's what I'm trying to do with Burned Haystack.
Well, and the thing that I really love about it is dating can be so miserable. It's miserable because you have to deal with so many shitty people. And then it's also miserable because it's emotionally intense in a really unpleasant way. Women are socialized to seek men's approval and they don't get it. And you just feel this like chronic rejection. Also, the fear. I mean, we pretty much all have terrible dating experiences where we're nearly murdered or raped or any number of things. So it's awful. But what you have done is you've taken this thing that is miserable and you've taken kind of the unpleasantness of confronting the misery of it and you've almost sort of gamified it. So you've taken something that feels awful and made it into like a fun little project and puzzle. And I think that really does something. Do you think that this maybe helps women feel less emotionally invested in dating and in a way that like makes them more discerning?
For sure. And there's a whole section in the book where I take women through a process to intentionally create that mindset because There's this sort of like, we all feel compelled, since the search is for love and intimacy, we feel compelled to address that through the channel of emotion, which will, I mean, that it just, it, number one, it doesn't work. Number two, it might get you raped and killed. And so we want to like intentionally adopt this like business-like, intellectual, gamified, as you just said, mindset to the early stages. And I don't mean just like the early stages of swiping. I mean like for the first several weeks. And some people push against that, but it takes several weeks to get to actually know someone. Like you can't tell after a date or two or three. You can definitely rule them out after a date or two or three, but you could have three great dates and he could still turn into a psycho. I was looking through screenshots. So I do you remember when we recorded our first podcast, you and I?
I think it was in maybe April or March of last year.
Okay. So that was before I met my needle. In fact, I looked at the date of when we like aired the first podcast, and I think it said August 6th, and I met my partner Pat on August 3rd in person for the
Oh.
first time. We'd connected on the app in July. And I mean, he was just 100% green flags, like in every single way from the beginning. But like just to like sort of like see where my own mindset was, I was scrolling back through text with my girlfriend. So I have three friends from childhood that we've been friends since we were 10 years old. So, and we share everything. So like our group chat on iMessage is basically like a collective biography of all of our lives. And even like several weeks into this, I found a text where I'd sent my girlfriends like all these great things Pat had done and how kind he was and just glowing. And then like three texts in, I was like, yeah, but I mean, I'm sure he's going to turn out to be a psycho, which like that's kind of insane, but it's also sort of a healthy mindset. You have
Yeah.
to stay very realistic, very businesslike. And I did do that, not because I have more willpower or strength than anyone else, but just because I know and because I have suffered from not doing that, like in some very bad ways that I'll never get over. And I know that. And I'm just determined to not let myself end up that way again. And I really don't want other women to end up in those kind of relationships either. So the mindset shift is vital. And I do spend a lot of time in the book talking about how to affect the mindset that I think is going to lead to the most success.
I think that part is so critical. It's so when I had so many bad dates. I made so many bad decisions with men and just like
Same.
awful, awful. And then I finally did, I went through a period where it's like I'm not ready to date because I just am not being discerning. And then I finally returned to dating and I created an application to be my boyfriend. And like I made a whole podcast episode about it. And I formed a committee of like three of my closest friends. And we worked on the application together and we put it in a binder. And our deal was we were going to meet every Saturday night and like record the data on like the men I was dating because the group consensus was that I just could not be trusted to make good decisions without like oversight.
I love that.
And, I had other friends who weren't so close who were like, this is batshit insane. You are a crazy person. Like, who's going to fill out an application to date you? And like, what is this? But the more I see how like that was the right way to do it, because it forced me to like slow down and really reflect on what is this person bringing objectively. And we would do things like my like best guy friend, we had a policy that he would always crash the second date. He would always just like show up to make sure I wasn't being murdered, but to also like screen the guy and see if he got weird about like me having a male friend. And it was great. And so, I love it that you have like a more formal system, but I just reflect on how many people thought I was being unreasonable or that my standards were too high. And the end result of that process is I've been with my husband for almost 20 years and we're like ecstatically happy. And everybody I know who thought I had standards that were too high has cycled through bad relationship after bad relationship. And so I say all that to highlight this isn't like a trivial thing. This is life and death
It
because
is.
the biggest risk to women is the men they date and marry and choosing. I don't want to say choosing wrong because that's not really what happens, but getting wrapped in too early with the wrong man can have devastating lifelong consequences. And it's just like impossible to overstate how horrific it can be.
Well, and even on a societal level, like as catastrophic as those kind of relationships become for the women in them, we're now talking about children being raised in those structures, right? It becomes generational. So, I think too often women's issues, women's relationship issues are viewed as like, oh, this is like fluffy stuff. It's inconsequential. It's like, women's morning news slash magazine slash Instagram feed sort of stuff. But it's actually what society is built upon. And so until we like collectively start taking these issues seriously, and that's one of the things I'm trying to do with Burned Haystack. We've got academic credibility. We've got like, this. All the just the size of the platform, the success stories that are building up, and the work that you're doing, the work that other feminist philosophers are doing, it is, we're getting to like a critical mass of people who are going to affect a sea change, and that's why men are so angry.
Oh,
Because
yeah,
for
absolutely.
the first time, I mean, really, in very recent history, like I would say the last 5 to 10 years, men are collectively starting to feel the consequences of their actions. Not nearly enough, but it is starting to happen because they're not getting dates and women aren't willing to marry them or have children with
And they
them.
say that. I mean,
Yes,
every
I
day on
know,
my
right?
Facebook, it's, well, you're going to end up alone with your cats and you need to lower your standards. And it's clear that they're feeling such insecurity about not being able to live up to like really basic human standards of decency. And you mentioned the children part. I want to talk about that a little bit more because almost everyone I work with is a mother because it's liberating motherhood. And the thing that I see that is just so devastating is that it's almost always the children keeping these women in bad relationships because they're concerned about child custody. They're concerned about, even if they win majority custody, their children, spending weekends with these bad men. And so they stay so that they can protect their kids, which is a laudable sacrifice. But also, they can never fully protect their kids because their kids are being raised in these toxic environments. And it is, it's such a toxic stew and it has generational consequences because those kids are going to grow up. And what happens to them and their relationship choices and their children?
Well, and yeah, and that manifests in a variety of ways, right? Like you risk young women growing up and choosing male partners who repeat their father's sins. You risk raising young men who've learned the lesson that you can actually do whatever you want to women and they'll stay. And we see the effects of that. So yeah, it's, I mean, there's an infinite set of like ramifications webbing out across all of human existence that has its roots in romantic relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. So going back to the angry men for a minute thing, I think the thing that I am seeing constantly, and I feel like I'm seeing it more. I feel like this idea is catching on more and more. This idea that women have to like lower their standards and it has this foundational belief that like men have like a vested interest in women's time, and that once you have spent any time with a man, you like owe him more of it. I see this constantly in women's spaces, whether it's her first date with some dude or like her 15th year with an asshole who obviously doesn't love her. There's this idea that women owe men relationships and that there's just like an entitlement to her time that she has to basically earn her way out of, which is so weird because it's basically framing relationships as a prison that women have to, like, find a way to escape. I
Their
like your.
time and our time and our bodies.
Yes. And I love how your system just completely looks past all of these weird, fucked up philosophical ideas and just asks, is this person good for the woman? Is he likely to make her happy? Is he likely to be a safe person? But what do we do about this idea that, like, women owe men chances? Like, it is so deeply ingrained.
I mean, I've removed five people from my Facebook group just this morning for that kind of rhetoric. Just give him another chance. He didn't mean it. You're all overreacting. I'm not like the other women in this group.
Oh my God.
Like, those are direct quotes just from this morning, like 10 minutes before you and I got on this call. I think our only hope is for women to unite with other women, which is why I don't let men into, my group on Facebook. And it's just gonna it's gonna take a while, I guess. I mean, it is way better thing. It's hard to, like, we have to remind ourselves sometimes because especially in America right now, we have definitely done some backsliding in certain segments of society. But overall, that there's that line from, I can't remember what play it is, the world only spins forward or something like that. Like, we are experiencing an extinction burst right now. Like, that's why the men are so loud and so angry and they're having temper tantrums and they're making a lot of noise, but that it's because change is happening that they can't reverse and they know it. And we're just going to have to kind of like ride through this with not just with men, but with women who are serving as a mouthpiece for the patriarchy. Like these women that I took out of my group this morning. I think they know that, I think in their bones, they know that something's not right about what they're saying, but I don't know. I can't access the psychological constructs that allows women to behave like toxic men. Definitely it's a thing. It's a problem. We're seeing a lot of it. I personally don't understand how it works.
I think it's like a safety-seeking behavior.
Yeah, it must be, right?
Yeah, like a desire to believe in a just world, and then, well, I'm not like the other women, so I'll make better choices, so I'll be okay. But the weird dynamic there is, like, there's this idea that, like, I make better choices than other women, but then also, like, actively undermining women who are trying to make better choices. It's
Yeah,
kind
it's
of like
almost
the men who say, like, choose better men and then get mad when we try to do that.
It is, it's almost like a collective Stockholm syndrome, right? These women who are reading all this red pill rhetoric and not only buying into it, but then replicating it. And we're seeing that in our national government right now too. So, yeah, I don't know.
So, okay, speaking of this red pill rhetoric thing, I didn't have this on my list to ask you, but I feel like you might be someone who can talk through this with me because it's just driving me bonkers. This widespread thing on social media where we're telling women to be in their feminine and so that they can attract masculine men and so that they can submit. They never define what submission means. I assume it just means having bad sex with someone who smells bad forever. But there's so many women I see who are feminist or feminist adjacent who are, like, buying into this, and it's just like gender essentialist bullshit. Are you seeing this? Do you have any thoughts on this?
I'm seeing it too. I think a lot of it is rooted in conservative Christianity, which is not like what I would consider real Christianity. I have a lot of people will say, is it impossible to be feminist and Christian? And my answer to that would be no. Like, I think you can be Christian and feminist, but there, the word Christian is an umbrella term at this point that's being co-opted by a whole lot of nonsense. So I don't know. I don't know if it's like pick me girl effect kind of stuff. I don't know if some of it is genuine, like thinking that really is real, the whole like feminist or feminine masculine dichotomy. I mean, It's been disproved in so many different ways through social science, through biological science, through anthropology. I don't know. I don't know if it's just a I don't think it's a, people want to say it's a lack of education. That's not right. Everyone who has a smartphone, which is pretty much definitely everyone on a dating app, has access to all of the knowledge of human history in their hand. So it's not that. It's not a lack of access. It's a lack of willingness to confront information with which you might not be comfortable.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's cowardice more than anything.
Well, also, it seems like maybe it's an attempt to put a kindler, gentler veneer on the violence of women's relationships, a way to romanticize it, I guess. It, kind of like how we dismiss domestic violence as just passion.
I
It's
mean, that maybe. I don't
so
know.
bad. Okay,
It's so
so
bad.
you and I talked a little bit about this before we recorded. This is like a frustration that I continue to have with women I work with, and I mean a frustration in that I really want to help them with this, and I do not know how, which is that there's so much intense patriarchal socialization that you can give women the literal manual, you can give them your book. And you can have a man waving red flags in front of them. And there is a significant number of women who feel like they're being unfair if they don't go out on a second date with him, who feel like, they owe everyone an opportunity to access their bodies. And like this is real. It's really deeply ingrained in there. How can we help women break out of this? Do you think that more exposure to things like burned haystack can sort of undo the conditioning? Like, what do you see with women moving beyond this thought process?
I do think that more exposure to things like Burned Haystack, to the content that you're writing on your Substack, I definitely think that helps. I've actually been thinking about this a lot lately because I've been asking myself the same question. Like, there's so many discourses out there right now that are intended to help women, and yet in many ways they're not. They're either because they're not getting through or they're just not being effective. And this is going to sound like I'm going off on a tangent, but I'll bring it back. There was an experiment in California several years ago, definitely more than 10 years ago, where they implemented self-esteem education in public elementary schools. Are you familiar with this?
Yeah, I've heard a little bit about this.
Okay, so the thought process was children are acting out or failing or getting into danger or whatever because they have low self-esteem. Okay, and there's a lot of research to support that idea that's true. So California Public Schools was like, then we will teach them self-esteem. And they made, I don't remember what they called it. They might have just called it self-esteem, but they made it a period in the school day that was, the same as like math or gym or art. And during that self-esteem period, students like celebrated themselves. They made collages of their face or their favorite things, and they wrote poems about everything that made them wonderful. And then at the end of the study, I can't remember how many years it went on, not very long, but at the end of the study, they compared the children who'd gotten self-esteem education to three control groups. One was high achieving adults, the second was average achieving adults, and the third was sociopaths on death row. So you're talking like serial rapists and murderers. And the children in their responses to the survey questions aligned most closely with these sociopaths. And they realized that what they'd done unintentionally was given these children the message that you're so wonderful just because you exist. It doesn't matter what you do or what you think or how you treat people, like you're just wonderful because you're you. And then the next takeaway from that study is that you can't actually teach self-esteem in that way. The way children actually develop self-esteem is to gain skills and knowledge that help other people or that accomplish something in the world. So if you can teach a child to effectively care for her younger siblings, she will get self-esteem from that. If you can teach a child to help her dad repair a car, she will get self-esteem from that, but she won't get it from being taught self-esteem. So I've been thinking about this study for years, and I'm also constantly like in touch with all these discourses in like what I'll call women's content in 2026, whether that's social media, podcasts, magazines, whatever it is. And I think we're spending way too much time teaching, trying to teach empowerment. Like, as a thing, we're teaching women to be empowered, but we're doing it in the stupidest of ways because it's not rooted in anything other than this, like, I am woman, hear me roar kind of messaging, which is actually nothing. That's like a vacuum of stupidity. It's the same thing as teaching self-esteem. So, what I would say is, you know what? Let's stop talking about empowerment. Or being in your defined feminine, or any of these other things that are not rooted in any kind of actual knowledge. And let's instead teach women what's happened in history when women have been disempowered. Let's teach them critical discourse analysis. Let's teach them applied rhetoric. Let's teach them feminist philosophy. I think you're a big fan of Kate Mann, right? Okay, so let's bring in some actual voices, some actual content knowledge, and through those channels, that's how women actually grow and become empowered. It's not through teaching empowerment. I think that's where we're going wrong.
Oh my God. Okay, so I have so many thoughts listening to you say this. The first thing that came to mind for me is that this is what patriarchy does to men with these self-esteem classes.
Yes,
You're the
yes.
prize, and men are
Right.
taught from birth that they're just like entitled to these relationships, and
Yes.
it makes it make sense why they behave the way they do in their relationships because they don't think they really have to earn them.
Right, exactly.
But then the inverse is also true for women. I mean, the thing I see constantly from men is that men hate it when women are proud of things. You know,
Yes.
if you have a career, then you're a career woman and you're bad. And then you're like, okay, well, I'm proud of giving birth to my children and that was hard and parenting them well. And it's like, well, everybody does that. Don't brag about that, you stupid bitch. Like, you know, whatever women are proud of, men are mad at them for being proud of it. And like, that's not an accident. There's a reason for that.
I mean, they're literally demanding that left and right in their dating app profiles. They want women who are humble, who have humility, who don't think too much of ourselves. Like they're using those words.
And it's like, I mean, have you ever met a woman who's not humble? Like, that's what patriarchy
No.
socializes us to be.
Right. We're all so humble. Yeah, we're humble to our own detriment all the time. Yeah.
Every time I have someone on my podcast and they send me their bio, like, I want to edit it and add like the 50 other like great things about, you know, I want to add, and this is also the greatest person who has ever lived, as we all know. Because women just like undersell themselves. But then I don't bring men on the podcast, but I get pitches from men to come on the podcast all the
Oh, I'm
time.
sure. Yeah.
Their
Oh,
bios are bonkers.
I know. I mean, their LinkedIn bios are
Oh my
bonkers.
God. They're just, you know, we can just never be as high achieving as, you know, the man who has a wife at home doing everything for him while she also works. All right, Jenny. Well, okay. Is there anything you want people to know about the book? Like,
I guess just that there's a lot of stuff. We're talking so much all the time in the Burned Haystack platforms about so many different ideas and concepts and applications. There's actually a lot new in the book that I've
yeah.
never talked about on social media. There's also, and I'm revealing this on your podcast. So
Ooh.
there's an Easter egg. Do you know that term in the book
I do.
about, okay. So there's some hidden coded, there's a hidden coded story in the book about a personal experience of mine that I think only women in the Facebook group will catch on to. But I want you to know it's in there. If you
Oh, I
want a
love that.
little like rhetorical challenge, and I'm saying that like purely for entertainment. It doesn't make it like any more meaningful that it was my story. It's kind of portrayed as someone else's, but it's in there just for fun, really. I ended up meeting my partner like after I had already handed over the manuscript, but there's an editing and revising process that goes on for quite a while. So there's some hidden info in there.
I love the hidden info thing. I made this post on Substack a couple of weeks ago. I love frogs, and anybody who follows me knows I love frogs, and I have pet frogs. I have like all these terrariums in
Oh.
my office. So I posted a picture of three of my frogs like hiding under a leaf together, and it was very cute. And I put on the caption, you can't see them because they're hiding, even though you could like obviously see them. And but like the I had an extra message there, which is like, look at these frogs trying to hide. Like this is like how men do it too. And so of course we can't see their badness because they're hiding. And I got lots of comments about, oh, those precious frogs. I don't see them. Where are they? And then I finally had one person post this long, like 5-paragraph thing explaining the frogs as like a metaphor for men. And her comment was like a little overwrought, and she went really deep on it, but in a really charming, like endearing way. And I was like, yeah. So, okay, I'm glad there's similar things in your book. I like that.
There's also a lot of resources in the book that go beyond my book. So there's reading lists in there and like for fun and for information. And there's just a it's a comprehensive text, but it's also extremely readable. Like we put a lot of time and energy. There was one chapter that when I submitted it, I knew HarperCollins was going to be like, yeah, well, we're going to have to scale back the academic talk on this one. And I knew it was coming in, and it was the correct move, and we did. But I'm proud to say we also retained all the intellectual weight of it. So I feel like it'll serve everyone well,
Well, this is
regardless
like
of,
one of the things I really love about your work is that it's not rooted in nothing. It's intellectually hefty, but so accessible. So you're doing all kinds of cool stuff, but you're also making people a lot smarter.
Thank you. I hope so. The other thing I want to assure everyone about with the book, because this is one of my concerns, we cut men no slack. Like we already know there's going to be a lot of anger because of things I wrote in the book. And to HarperCollins's credit, they were behind me 100%. Like they are willing to lose readers in order to say what needs to be said by women for women. Like we just decided, that I guess 50% of the population will have to be enough of a target audience for this book. So we truly pulled no punches. There's no watering down. I'm sure the death threats will be coming, and we're prepared for that.
I love that. I'm so glad to hear that because I think so often feminists are pressured to water down our message and make it
Oh
appeal to
yeah.
men. And it's like, it's not for men. It's just
It's
not.
not right, exactly. If they want to read it and learn from it, fine. But we don't care. So
I love it. We
yeah.
don't care. Well, I'm so glad you had your support of your publisher for that too. That's wonderful.
They've
And
been a dream
Jenny, like,
team.
you're just wonderful. So
Oh, so are you.
thank you so
Thank
much for
you.
coming on and for
Thank
writing this
you.
amazing book. I hope everybody loves it. It will be out April 7th. I'm going to put all of Jenny's information in the podcast notes. She also has a Substack. She has this amazing Facebook group. Make sure it's her group and not one of the theft groups. And Jenny's just the best. So thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you for having me back. It's been the hour has flown by again.
Yeah, it's been great having you. And listeners, I will be back next week. So thanks for listening.